Most stories start with a fundamental disadvantage. They're written by writers. Writers are the last people one should entrust with the writing of a story. They are prone to poetic paragraphs evoking the passage of the seasons. Egocentricity, procrastination, irrationality, hysteria, self-pity, self-delusion, pretension, prolixity, alcoholism. These are handicaps in most professions. For writers, they're qualifications. It's the egocentricity that's the worst offence. A writer experiences panic when trying to convey simple information. The dentist unlocked the door of her surgery and went inside. A writer would spit on such a sentence. What can a writer write about the dentist, the lock, the door, and the surgery that will draw attention to the writer's extraordinary, in his or her view, talent? All we want is for the dentist to enter the surgery and get on with the bloody story. Fear not. I am not a writer. I am a barrister. And shall write like a barrister, dedicating myself to the ruthless pursuit of clarity. When Mr. Justice Abelman passed sentence on me, he said,
"It is nothing short of a tragedy that a person of your distinguished provenance has destroyed years of scholarship and attainment with one egregious act."
That was not a banishment. On the contrary, would Mr. Justice Abelman have used the words egregious and provenance when addressing a pop star embarrassed with drugs? No. Mr. Justice Abelman was talking to one of his own. It was a recognition of my continued membership of the Freemasonry of the Bar. These days, everyone who has some explaining to do has an "and." My name's Myra, and I'm an alcoholic. Very well, then. My name's Robert, and I'm short.
A Short Gentleman by John Cantor. Episode 1.
Our London home was just off Kensington Church Street, but most weekends and every summer, we motor to our house in Aldborough on the Suffolk coast. And once a year, my parents invite the local tradesman of Aldborough for a drink.
"Please, call me Michael."
"Yes, your worship."
My father was Lord Justice Purcell.
"Offer Mrs. Martin the crisps, Robert."
"Oh, I've run out."
"Then go and get some more."
"Yes, father."
My mother was the daughter of the Lord Lieutenant of Gloucestershire. Her duty at the party is to sit with Granny P in the kitchen, keeping her away from the guests.
"Do you know what the doctor wants to do with me now?
Are there any more crisps?
He wants to send me to a psychiatrist."
"Oh, shut your cake, old ma. On the side there. There, Robert, there."
"Oh, yes."
"Do you know what a psychiatrist is, Robert?"
"Yes, Granny.
Nosy Jew."
We're waiting for the crisps, Robert."
Having handed round the second bowl of crisps, and knowing that the grown-ups are all otherwise engaged, I sneak into my father's study. My father's study is out of bounds, and as I enter it, I feel the might of the law. I am in the presence of a great power. I gaze at the tomes on his shelves in search of a book with a red spine. Who's Who, 1964. I have to stand on a chair to reach it.
"Yes?"
"What are you doing?"
"Nothing."
I pick up the chair and the book. I turn its pages until I find my father.
Oval. "Purcell, Michael Herbert, a circuit judge. Bar, 3rd July, 1919. Sir of late Robert Arthur Purcell. Ed Duck, Winchester and Christ Church, Oxford."
Then I replace the book, go to my bedroom, and write this.
"Purcell, Robert Timothy, Bar, 28th of March, 1956. Sir of Michael Herbert Purcell, QC. Ed Duck, Winchester and Christ Church, Oxford."
That's right. Aged 8, I write an imaginary Who's Who entry, stating which school and Oxford College I will attend. I am not being whimsical. These are logical deductions given my pedigree and aptitudes. My life at this age, and long afterwards, is governed by certainties. That night, I lie awake. My elbow is hurting from where I fell off the chair, and I don't want to fall asleep before my mother comes to say goodnight. But she comes so late that when she says goodnight, she wakes me up.
Little man, you asleep?
Almost. I've got something to tell you.
Yes?
I went into Father's study. I knocked over a chair.
I see.
What will my punishment be?
Forget it.
But
go to sleep, little man.
I am outraged by my mother's unconcern. That is why, many years later, it was I who reported my crime. I felt a legal, moral, and administrative obligation to confess my wrongdoing. It is in Aldborough that I learn to ride a bike, sail, play tennis, and swim. My partners in fun are the younger generations of these families: the Holts, the Thodays, the Moxon Smiths, the Cattos, the Hamilton Woods. The largest and most vicious of my Aldborough contemporaries is Pilkington. Do not tell me that my childhood was unhappy because Pilkington punched me. Pilkington punches everyone. He punches Martin Thoday. He punches Stephen Catto. Once, he punches Damien Hawes and Jeremy Hamilton Wood simultaneously when they are standing side by side with a double-fisted jab I've never seen elsewhere, not even in a film. Had I not been punched by Pilkington, I'd have been unhappy. On this occasion, I put a cold flannel on my nose and tried to avoid my parents until bedtime.
Come in.
Oh. Pilkington? Did you hit him back?
No.
Why not?
He's bigger than me.
Nonsense. You must hit back, little man. Hitler was short.
I promise.
That's more like it. Hey, there's a bit of ice cream left if you want it.
No, thank you. I've brushed my teeth.
Right. I'll have it.
I go to bed. I switch off my bedside light. This, it seems, is the cue for my father to enter.
You're a boy of limited height at the moment. But you've got unlimited intelligence. Now, men of violence and stupidity are always discontented, whereas men of superior intelligence always have their thoughts to keep them happy. I'd rather you were a short gentleman than a large lout, no matter how rich or successful.
This is a prophetic remark, as Pilkington will grow up to become head of alternative asset management at a bank whose name escapes me.
Disputes must be solved by word, not deed. That's why law exists.
I want to be a judge, like you.
Oh, that's good. Now, by the way, Robert, psychiatrists aren't nosy Jews. They are professional men.
Right.
Jews and Negroes are as welcome in this house as anyone else.
Good. Were there any Jews at the drinks party?
The point is not how many Jews were invited. The point is, had there been any Jews, they'd have been as welcome to our drinks as anyone else. Good night, then.
Good night.
Least said, soonest mended.
These days, of course, it's the opposite. Most said, soonest mended. For instance, it is inconceivable in the 21st century that Edward Heath could be Prime Minister. A modern heathosexual would not be granted the keys to Number 10, not without a Mrs. Heath to stand by him on the threshold. Could Mr. Heath have a Mr. Heath? Undoubtedly. But boyfriend Heath, civil partner Heath, would be obliged to spill a few well-chosen beans. Ted's unmatching buttocks, perhaps. Ted's cries in the night. Ted's flossing obsession. This is what has happened in the course of my life. Things that were public are privatized, things that were private are publicized. Hence this confession. I leave Oxford with a first-class degree and the Hart Chambers Prize for the best paper on company law in the final honour school of jurisprudence. I also leave Oxford unknown to woman. However, I feel it is time to find a wife. And girls, those future wives, expect sexual experience. Even jolly girls, conservative girls, girls with pearls. One Friday night in July 1979, aged 23, a barrister of 1 year's call, I sit on a sea wall in Aldborough at the back of the Cross Keys pub with Pilkington.
I took Tiki Moxon Smith out for a drink to cheer her up.
Pilkington is already something in the city. He's too thick to do anything else.
Went to a restaurant on the King's Road, got totally bladdered.
One doesn't know what the something is.
She needed cheering up, know what I mean? So I gave her a good cheering up.
Are you going to see her again?
I don't know.
Pilkington stares out to sea as if the sea contains more girls.
Plenty more fish in the sea.
He isn't going to see her again, I can tell. Tiki Moxon Smith is surprised to hear from me.
Robert!
She doesn't, however, object to meeting me.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe a restaurant on the King's Road.
Okay.
This is a good start. The King's Road is where she got bladdered with Pilkington prior to sexual intercourse. I've already achieved the King's Road. Now I only have to negotiate the bladdering and the intercourse.
This is great! Let's get totally bladdered!
What?
Let's get totally bladdered!
Yes!
Christ, you can't hear a thing in here!
No, terrible!
This is disingenuous. I've chosen the restaurant with loud music to prevent conversation and aid eating. The meal is an overture to sex, and overtures should be short.
Let's get the bill. Coffee at mine.
Right.
We sit on her sofa.
Why do men tell you they love you and then go off with someone with bigger tits and never phone?
Not all men do.
No, you can speak, can you?
Yeah.
Why are you here? Why did you ring me up? You've shown no interest in me at all. You haven't asked me a question all night. What's the point of asking me out to dinner if you're not going to talk to me? Did you do it for a bet?
No.
Why are you here, then?
This is it. I am a barrister on a sofa with a girl. I cannot pretend to be a charming seducer. I can't be something I'm not. I will be myself. That is what integrity means. I will therefore address Tiki as a judge, with respect, but without ingratiation. I will give her my best point.
I want to have sex with you.
Tiki, unfortunately, spots the pause. But any young barrister will have moments like this.
You've picked on me. My neighbour's in. Why don't you ask her? God, you're a weird little man.
Please note, this is not a no. I take off my glasses.
Does Chris Pilkington know you're here?
No.
I suppose you don't know anything about foreplay.
I bow to your superior knowledge.
And so it is that sometime around 11 p.m. on Friday the 20th of July, 1979, I have sexual intercourse, which involves Tiki in a great deal of work, which I need not detail here. In the morning, she makes me coffee and toast.
You know this won't happen again.
Yes. Yeah.
This is just as I intended. I went to Tiki Moxon Smith to lose my virginity. One can't lose one's virginity twice.
I'm going to Waitrose now. Do you mind? I want to get there before the crowds.
Absolutely.
You don't have to leave. Relax. Finish your toast.
I am obliged to remain when she leaves to show her I am relaxed about the toast.
Bye.
Bye.
I pour my coffee down the sink, put the toast in the bin, count to 100, and walk out. My mission has been accomplished. I have passed another exam. What exam have I yet failed? A fortnight later, I am in Aldborough for the weekend with my parents. I take Duncan, my parents' West Highland Terrier, for a walk along the track to the yacht club.
Pilkington?
Don't ever go near Tricky again!
In the cross keys, I seek an explanation from Boo Risden.
That was why she slept with you, you plonker, so that you tell Pilkers.
Why did she want me to tell him? She's already slept with him.
Oh, no, she hasn't.
They got bladdered on the King's Road.
That's all. Nothing happened. She wasn't sure he was interested. You were supposed to goad him into action.
I cannot be held responsible for the labyrinthine consequences imposed upon my actions by others.
Oh, shut up.
A year later, Tickey and Pilkington are married. In irrational moments, I think of myself as somehow responsible and wonder if I should have done with Tickey what Edward Heath would have done, which is to say, nothing at all. Thankfully, I have few irrational moments. 4 years later, a grateful client invites me to the 1983 Record Industry Awards at the Grosvenor House Hotel in Mayfair. I have no interest in going, but feel it impolite to refuse.
We come to the award for the best award.
The invitation says black tie, which pleases me. Regrettably, I am the only man at my table dressed in black tie. There is a red frock coat and a snakeskin jacket. Two seats away, a man with a wedding ring sports a dress. In his defence, the dress is full-length sky-blue chiffon, thoroughly appropriate for the occasion. On my other side, a woman is smiling at me.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Judy. Judy Page. I've been watching you. You're the cleverest man in the room.
Thank you, but you haven't met all the men in the room.
I don't need to. What brings you here?
On behalf of the group Madagascar Sam, Diamond Bay Records sued the group Madagascar Sam We Are Not for identity theft and passing off. I appeared for Madagascar Sam.
Oh. Who won?
I did.
See? I'm never wrong about people.
I have to go home now.
Right. I'll come with you.
Why did she say that? I cannot understand why Judy Page said that. A minute later, she and I are in a taxi, heading for my flat in Canonbury. With Tickey Moxon-Smith, I had a purpose. With Judy Page, I have none. Oh. When she puts her hand on my knee, I feel that somehow my knee is under attack.
I like the law. I've always wanted to meet a judge. Could you introduce me to one?
My father is a High Court judge. You can meet my father.
That's wonderful.
Then she looks down at my trousers and lowers her head. I know at once that Judy Page has lost a contact lens. I keep perfectly still.
Can you see it?
I carry on believing she is searching for a contact lens for as long as I can.
Was it Canterbury Park North, sir, or Canterbury Park South? Sir, there's two of them. You see, there's Canterbury Park North and there's...
It's Canterbury Terrace!
Thanks, love.
A week later, we are buying a rug from the Conran shop.
You need a rug.
Do I?
Yes. You need a rug in front of the fireplace in the sitting room.
You'll get so much pleasure from this, sir.
We will. Oh, look at this kiln! Wouldn't that look fantastic in the attic?
I haven't got an attic.
No, but I have.
Half an hour later, we are buying a dress from Liberty's.
Ta-da! I could wear this to the drinks party at your chambers. Do you think it's too short?
Well...
Why? Don't you think you can be serious and sexy? Why are English women so weird about being sexy? Why can't they be like French women? What do you think?
At this point, a writer might describe how Judy Page looks in the dress. They'd do this to bring Judy Page to life. But I'm not a writer. I'm here to confess. Let me confess, then, my reluctance to bring Judy Page to life. I wish for the opposite. Not to bring her to her death, for that would be illegal, but to render her obscure, opaque, and a long, long way away. I fear for Judy Page as I wait for her in a wine bar prior to the drinks in chambers. She lacks education, and her dress is too short. But my mood alters within minutes of our arrival at the party.
You lucky bugger. What's a girl with legs like that doing with a boring sod like you?
Hello, Alan.
I loathe Alan Temperley, and he loathes me. Alan Temperley came fourth in our bar finals of 1979. To give you an idea of what that means, I came third.
What was that little slapper found under?
Alan says she's had a hard life.
I'm sure that dress is making it easier. Did you bring a lady friend, Robert? I'd like to look at her dress.
I can't see her.
This is true, because at that moment, Alan Temperley is blocking my view of Judy. Judy is keen to make up for her lack of education. I introduce her to Bach. She says that the music speaks to her, and that's why on Sunday mornings, Judy Page hoovers my flat, naked, to Bach's cello suites in either the Casals or Rostropovich versions, both of which I own. Does this need to be done?
Absolutely.
She shows me the areas my cleaner had neglected.
Under the table, behind the hi-fi.
To watch her nakedly vacuuming is to witness the changes she's wrought in my life. The rug is new. Judy Page is new. Nudity is new.
Shouldn't I close the curtains?
Oh, let them look if they want to. If they've got nothing better to do.
On the balcony of the council flats opposite sits Theo, the Cypriot who runs the mini-market round the corner. He has taken to sitting on his balcony every Sunday morning. I wave, but he never waves back. Then one Sunday, Theo is no longer there. I hear Theo's son telling a customer that Theo has died of pneumonia. Has Judy Page killed him? No, that is far-fetched, or, as we say in the law, too remote. What one can say is that she provoked the circumstances in which Theo's death was facilitated. She killed Theo in the same way she later killed my father. But as a lawyer, I accuse her of nothing.
This is my father.
Welcome to Auburn.
How do you do?
My mother.
Would you like a drink?
Yes, thank you. I brought you these.
Liqueur chocolates. You shouldn't have.
While my mother serves, Judy Page engages my father in conversation.
Is it lonely being a judge? Have you ever regretted a guilty verdict?
Well, it is the jury that brings in the verdict.
Ashtray.
Oh, I'll get it.
You've got a smashing pair of legs.
Oh, thank you.
I bet you have trouble keeping them shut.
Delicious crumble, Mother. Did you play bridge, Judy? We usually play bridge after supper.
Oh, perhaps Lady Purcell would prefer to play strip poker.
That wouldn't be equitable, would it? I have shirt, tie, vest, underpants, trousers, socks and shoes. You're not even wearing a tie. Would you like coffee?
Who is it?
It's us. Can we come in?
This is extraordinary.
Yes, come in.
Both my parents are in the bathroom with me. When I was a boy, there was no parenting. There were parents, but it was not their job to hang around the bathroom having a relationship with you by spending quality time. Why would they want to spend time with you? You were a child. Your mother would inquire from a different floor whether you'd brushed your teeth. Your father wouldn't ask. He was reading the paper. For more than half the year, of course, you were at boarding school. He was reading his paper 150 miles from your bath.
You've made a mistake, little man.
If I might... Your mother's referring to the young lady.
The main thing with mistakes is not to marry them. You may think that sex is important now, but believe me, your father and I haven't bothered with that nonsense in years.
Well, anyway...
We were hoping you could find someone who could play bridge.
She's common. It's not your fault.
She takes great pride in her appearance.
That's because she's a tart.
I wonder if... I think we've said enough.
I can't betray my parents, my breeding, and the spirit of Aldborough. I don't want to see Judy again. I will not confront her or abuse her, I will do what any gentleman would do. Withdraw.
Robert!
I don't answer. I hide behind my new sofa.
I know you're in there.
Already I hate it for its newness. Sofas are meant to be old.
I know you're there, Robert. Your lights are on.
I get up and switch out the lights.
You can hear me through it.
How dare you not return my calls?
Not returning your calls is an act of omission. Acts of omission don't require daring. Climbing Everest takes daring. Omitting to climb Everest takes no daring at all.
Barristers deal in hindsight. What's done is done. No barristers consulted before the crime. I'm considering robbing a bank, Mr. Purcell. How can I ensure that if I'm caught, I receive the minimum sentence? Would being high on a cocktail of drugs work for or against me? What about a voice? As I walk into the bank, should I hear a voice? If so, whose voice should I hear? My late mother's? Jesus Christ's? What about Sir David Attenborough's? Since my conviction, I am no longer a practising barrister. That doesn't mean I'm no longer a barrister. Sebastian Coe will always be an athlete, though no one expects him in middle age to run to the House of Lords. Nevertheless, the point is well taken. I shall avoid hindsight. On we go, then, all the way. Without the benefit of hindsight, to the night of my crime.
A Short Gentleman was adapted by Robin Brooks and starred Hugh Bonneville as Robert Purcell. Father was James Hayes, mother Nicola McAuliffe, young Robert, Joseph Lindsay, Tiki Catherine Jakeways, Pilkington Ewan Bailey, Boo Adjua Ando, Judy Page, Tracy Wilds and Alan Gerard McDermott. The director was Jonquil Panting.